for members only. Golf Smarter number 395, published on July 30, 2013.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Picking the best driver for your game. Part 2 with club fitter Nick Manzano.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Nick.
Thank you.
Good to have you. Well, we're still here. We're still in your offices at the Golf Mart here in San Rafael, California. And again, we talked about if you want to know more about where you can go to one of the sister stores, go to Worldwide Golf Shops, Google that, and you'll find something near you somewhere in the United States. It seems like they are growing, and it's a quality organization. I've been dealing with them for a long time, and I'm really glad to spend some time with you talking about custom club fitting and why there's advantages for the average golfer, for all golfers, to be fitted from a local retailer, or as you called, a pro shop on steroids, versus
a big box pro shop.
A big box pro shop. Thank you. To do that versus going to an individual who has limited resources.
Well, there, you got a couple different choices, and it, for me, you know, I think the Golf Mart, Roger Dunn's, what we have is the best of all worlds. You know, sometimes it's a bit crazy and we've got too much to do at one time, but you know, as long as somebody has a little bit of patience or is lucky enough to show up at a quieter time, everything works really good. And the resources available are, probably second to none. The, when dealing with, custom club builders, as I mentioned in the earlier broadcast, they're very limited usually in the club heads they have. And some are very talented, but like myself, perhaps, when I had my custom club business, you know, not the greatest business manager. And so how do you manage the inventory and all those products and samples and fitting carts and then make it all pay and work? You know, here I just get to do nice fittings. And that's taken care of by a very well-proven, you know, corporate business plan that's worked over the years. And I just plug myself in and do fittings. The other coin is, you know, pro shops and club professionals and golf club professionals. And just like a great club fitter, most of those guys and gals do great jobs too. But again, most pro shops are usually limited and they don't have all the brands. They have, you know, the brand the pro represents and is on staff with, and they have.
How does that work at pro shops? I mean, you'll go in and you'll say, wait a minute, don't you have the new Nike here or, you know?
Well, most pro shops over the last, I've watched this with my club repair business, is most pro shops really have made a choice. They've either gone really big, like, say, Hagen Oaks up in Sacramento.
Right, which we recently visited there.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Their demo day, and it's huge.
And then most pro shops have downsized, and mm-hmm. And there's lots of reasons, a lot of break-ins. Because it's hard to secure. Uh-huh. The other reason is, you know, managing the inventory. It's an industry that cycles every 6 months to a year with product. And so
that's to your advantage here at the Golf Mart.
That's to our advantage because of the volume we do. Things cycle. We get rid of the product faster than most because of the volume we have. So, and because of the clout and our buying power, we can ship stuff back to the manufacturers and get credit if it's not selling.
Where small pro shops don't have that kind of
leverage.
Yeah,
they don't have that. Well, they probably do have that advantage, but does that golf professional have experience in retail merchandising?
Right.
And to what degree does he have that experience? And
probably none.
Best recent example here was right after the G25s came out from Ping. They were selling great because I think at least half, if not more than half, of the tour players switched to the G25 when it came out. So it had great credibility and presence on tour. And being a high MOI, moment of inertia club head, it is very appropriate for a lot of recreational golfers as well. And it started selling great. And because it had the same basic adjuster sleeve as the Answer, which was not as forgiving a club head, they stopped selling almost instantly. So we sent the Answers back to Ping and got G25s.
Mm.
You know, little things like that. Your smaller pro shop is a little more challenged to manage that stuff, and especially understanding the golf professionals and assistants there are also, you know, mixing up fitting and selling clubs. It's probably a second to teaching and managing the game and managing the course and promoting the game and putting on clinics and, you know, so they have a mixed duty, kind of like we have a mixed duty here. We have to price things and break down boxes and packages and put them up on the shelf and put up on display, and we do fittings.
Right.
So
right. That cycling that you referred to, that manufacturers, you know, they're very, very limited. There are very strict rules on what they can do to their golf clubs, to the golf heads, the shafts, you know, the USGA rules. And it seems like they're always pushing the limit as far as they can go on what they're able to do. And yet they continue to come out with new product every 6 months, the big boys. Right. And this is, I hope I'm not putting you in an uncomfortable position by asking you this, because nobody's listening. It's just the two of us.
I'm uncomfortable anyway. So what does it matter? I'm not a radio personality.
Are they really coming up with different things? Or are they just, as I like to jokingly say, are they just painting the head white and saying this is a completely different golf club?
No, there's... you know, I was talking about the engineering departments earlier, but then you can talk about the marketing departments.
Well, and we've laughed about the advertising budgets probably dwarf their R&D, although they spend a lot of money in R&D, but I didn't realize, and you brought it up, the legal department probably has huge budgets too.
Well, the legal department's necessary because of clones, knockoffs,
yeah,
counterfeits,
exactly.
And just as I mentioned, the intellectual property. You know, there's certain things that companies can't copy because Callaway has the patent, or Titleist has the patent, Ping has the patent, and so they have to protect the assets that they have intellectual property wise, as well as promote the new stuff they've either licensed or they've figured out on their own, or what have you not. But going back to, you know, the pro line major manufacturers and why somebody should consider buying that compared to custom club stuff from some of the better custom club suppliers, or even some of the better knockoffs that are legal that, you know, you can find out there too. The difference today, and the biggest difference in the club heads, is going to be twofold, in my opinion. One is the degree of adjustable drivers. The amount of adjustment you have in a driver head today, over the last couple of years, it's like a renaissance. You can adjust left, right, up, down, 1 degree, half a degree, 2 degrees. It's just tuning. So,
right, I know, so, but it's like, you know that you're not supposed to make adjustments on your swing during a round. Now you're adjusting your clubs and your swing, and you're, you know, it's like...
Well, I'm talking about the ability to fit somebody on a tour level, which you couldn't do before.
Right.
In the tour departments of the major...
But should the average golfer have an adjustable driver and be messing with it? Because, you know, like the 15 handicap, the mid-hand, even a 10 handicap, you know, they're not in the single digits realm yet. But should they be messing with, once they get fitted and get the right club, should they be tweaking this thing?
It depends on the individual. Some do all right. Most, I would have to admit, usually adjust it wrong.
Yeah.
And they don't have access to a launch monitor, so, and they don't know
what
numbers are good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if they have their own in-house simulator in their man cave at home,
or on their
smartphone, and they've done their research properly, that they can do it themselves. But, you know, that's a lot of resource to have.
And so when people come in and ask you, so how often should I adjust this? What do you tell them when someone says, you know, now that you've set this for me, when should I make these adjustments?
Most people say quite the contrary. They usually walk out with it standard.
Uh-huh.
Or after being fit, they're going to leave it that way.
Yeah.
And some of them don't even bother to ask for the wrenches when they leave the store.
So are these customizable heads? Are these customizable heads more for the golfer, or are they for you, the fitter?
Both. They make my job as a fitter incredibly easy.
I bet.
Because I can pull out one club head and just sit there and play with it and get the numbers right.
Mm-hmm. Nick, line one.
And that sounds like you got a call coming in.
I do.
Do you want to tell him to bug off and continue this conversation, or do you want me to put this on pause?
Yeah, I better take the call. And
can we put this on pause?
We can.
Okay, I'll meet you out on the show floor and we'll start talking about a gear.
Okay.
We are now out on the show floor here at the Golf Mart in San Rafael, and obviously the doors are open. There are customers that are here. There are guys over in the practice putting greens. There's hundreds of putters out here and club head covers. But what I wanted to do is Rocky the Flying Squirrel just flew right by me. So the first place that I come up to are sets, and here I see Nike, Callaway, more Callaway. What am I looking at here?
Adams.
Adams Golf. We didn't even mention them before. More of that. And TaylorMade, Ping, right?
Yep. This is the graphite iron section.
Okay.
So those are all the graphite, not all of them, but most of the graphite irons currently available.
And do I notice that most of the graphite shafts also come with cavity back on the irons? You're not going to find a lot of blades with...
Generally not. Usually the assumption is somebody going to graphite has a softer swing, and it's going to benefit from a cavity back design with a lower center gravity, mm-hmm. A little bit more help getting in the air, just like the graphite shaft is a softer tip and launches higher, mm-hmm. and lighter, and swings with more ease as well.
And then over here, I see more cavity back clubs, but these look like steel shafts now.
Well, here we have two rows here now. Mm-hmm. So this is the men's steel shafted iron section. So we have everything here. So every manufacturer has an arsenal of club heads. So Callaway's right here in front of us. You've got the X-Hot Pro, and then you have the Forgings, the Razor X's, and then you have last year's Razor X in a combo set. So you have a whole array of products that you can package as a set of 7 or 8 irons, or you can order a la carte. If, for instance, somebody isn't comfortable hitting a 5 iron, you can get just 6 to pitching wedge and a sand wedge.
So here I see that you have these Callaway clubs that are reduced price, almost half the price of the ones right next to it because they're last year's model.
Yeah.
But how significantly different are these two sets of clubs, and is this a bad buy at half the price?
It all depends on the fit. The year over year, sometimes they make really small, subtle improvements, mm-hmm. And sometimes they make huge leaps and bounds. It just depends on the club and the product and, which year. What they stumble across, in the R&D department, or it's all individual.
When do you remember a huge leaps and bounds? By which manufacturer, when was it that you saw one set of irons to the next was huge leaps and bounds of improvement? Do you remember anything specific?
Well, I've only been in this side of the industry for a year and a half.
Okay.
So you were in custom club fitting. I was a custom club builder for years, mm-hmm. So I'm not really qualified to answer that. But generally what I know about the history, the big leaps and bounds were more probably a little bit back in the past when Ellie Callaway and Carsten Solheim started pioneering cavity back irons and the investment casting. The biggest leap and bound was probably investment casting over forging. Because investment casting allowed manufacturers with the molten steels, 431 steels, the 17-4 steels, you can form a cavity back iron, and you can distribute the metal around in a more precise way. Forgings, you're stamping a billet of steel in a big press and then shaping and hand finishing it. So the time it takes to do that and the limitations of what you can stamp in a forging process was a huge difference, and that's what brought golf to everybody and made it easier for people to play, and recreational golfers everywhere have benefited from that.
All right, now let's take a walk over here to a wall of drivers, and I see signs that say Callaway, TaylorMade, Titleist, Ping, Adams, Nike, ladies. So let's talk about what's hot these days, what you like, and why. And then, conversely, what's selling really well and why? Because of last, you know, we just finished the Open Championship and Phil did incredibly well and nobody could putt. The greens were driving everyone crazy except Phil on Sunday.
Well, we can segue right there. And Sunday, right after the Open, sold two of the three deep three woods. Not the same ones Phil was hitting, but, you know, very similar.
Yeah, how close, really, the clubs that they're hitting, how close are these to that?
They can be the same club. Oftentimes, a pro will be handed a club by the manufacturer's rep, and they'll hit it. And their swings are so good and so precise. They hit it well. And it just happens to be a perfect fit. Visually, it sets up for them the way they want it to. And granted, the manufacturer's reps have already have an idea of what they like. So yep. They go ahead and hand them something that's pretty darn close to what's going to work for them. Mm-hmm. And it has the shaft in it that they want it, that they're used to. They pick it up. They look at it. It looks great. They give it a practice swing. It feels good. They go out and hit the ball. It goes right down the middle. They hit it a couple more times. It seems to be doing just what they want. There's nothing horribly custom about it. That could go right into their bag.
Hmm.
Now, there are times when... for instance, I'm guessing McIlroy's going through this right now, is they're tweaking things, and he's tweaking things in his swing and trying to figure out what's going on with the switch from Titleist to Nike. And on another level in playing, some of those guys, you know, they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on golf clubs for them just to get it right. But that's, you know, paid for by... you know, a huge marketing commitment by some of those players. But if fit properly, and the other thing too, I guess the most important thing is, it you were talking about, is this club the same club? And in most cases, it's not, and you're right in what you were leading to. It could be, but it usually is not, but it's not appropriate. The biggest, I think, mistake most people make coming in to buy golf clubs is they go by the tour head or the TP head or the pro head. The assumption is that's better. And the fact of the matter is it's not. For most golfers, it's worse.
Why?
Tour heads tend to have a higher center of gravity, a smaller head so they can shape shots and work the ball left or right. They're not going to default straight as easily. The higher center of gravity is going to launch lower with less spin because the tour player generates enough spin. The recreational heads have a lower center of gravity, a bigger head. They're going to default straight. They're going to be easier for most people to hit.
This is such important information you just saved. I can't believe, like, and this is really valuable.
And this is where Tom Wishon goes nuts with our side of the industry. If you read his books, you know, the 12 Myths and The Perfect Driver, he gets some digs in on the conventional golf industry. And they're fair. He works both sides of the fence. He consults with PGA guys and Golf Digest and does seminars on that side and is well-respected by PGA pros across the country. And then he does what he does on the custom club side, and he's probably has more respect there even. But it's the marketing sometimes, or people both on a pro shop level and in a store like ours, that let somebody just walk out the door with that better head. You know, if somebody wants to buy it and try it, as I said earlier, that's fine. They can go try it, and we've got our 90-day warranty. They can bring it back, give it a whirl. If it doesn't work, though, that's when the custom club fitting comes in, mm-hmm. and that's when they come back into the store, mm-hmm. and they're returning something. It's a very important question to ask. Okay, why didn't it work? What was going on? And you start the fitting interview process right then and there, and hopefully when they walk out the second time, they've got a more appropriate head. And that's where this arsenal, you see how many different heads we have here. You can't walk into, you know, most custom club builders and and see as many choices
against the wall this long. This is probably a 35, 40 foot wall of just clubs.
And each one of these club heads are backed up by, you know, a huge engineering and R&D department.
Right.
And just as importantly, because people have to want to buy it, you know, a marketing department that takes those engineering feats, whether they be a small one, as we mentioned earlier, or a big leap and bound, like some of the new adjustable drivers. We were talking about irons earlier, but the biggest leap and bound in technology is the fully adjustable drivers. And that combined with a launch monitor and a little bit of fitting expertise doesn't take a ton. You know, somebody can have the equivalent of a tour level fitting today that only tour players could get, you know, on a full Doppler radar TrackMan with a couple technicians standing by 10, 15 years ago. So it really is a renaissance.
Okay, as I'm looking at these Callaway drivers, you know, visually, from where I'm, you know, I'm just looking at the base of the bottom, the foot of each of these clubs. But visually, I can immediately tell a difference. I see, you know, not just in a red or a green or a white with some red stripes, but even the paint design, I can gravitate to. And I see some are adjustable where some are not. Are there big differences in these three different Callaway clubs?
You know, big differences, no, but there's lots of little differences. People don't understand that they're tuned for different swing speeds and different ability levels and different price points as well. So that's why there's that many different drivers.
And then we come over to the next rack here, the next row, and probably what seems to be the more newer drivers that I'm seeing when I'm playing with friends or just out on playing with strangers, whatnot, these tailor-made white head drivers.
Yeah, we actually have two racks of tailor-made. They're the number one driver in golf. And,
why?
And
where did they come from? I mean, like, they came out of nowhere, it seems like, once they...
Well, they've been number one for years in drivers, both on tour and recreationally. And they're not willing to give up that spot, so they keep innovating.
And are they... That's what I keep coming back to. Is there room for innovation? What are they doing that is so unique?
Well, what they did last year, which was really, really smart and brilliant, is with the acquisition of Adams Golf... And being able to use their speed slot technology. And they came out with the Rocket Balls, the original one. And this year we have the Stage 2, which refined a few things that weren't so easy for a lot of people to hit. But what was brilliant is they took that great fairway wood innovation and they used that to market their drivers as well. You know, the drivers didn't have a leap and bound breakthrough. The fairway woods did. But, you know, with the association, they sold a lot of drivers.
The speed slot. So it's kind of like a cavity back wood, huh?
Well, the whole bottom half of the face springs. On a normal fairway wood, you have the frame is at the bottom of the head. So when you miss it low, the face stops rebounding. Okay. Most fairway woods today have a high COR trampoline face just like the drivers do. But when you get down to the bottom of the club head, where the sole is and where most of the weight is, that's the frame that supports the face. So you don't get that bounce. On the rocket balls, you do. So with the whole bottom half of the face being able to move, they took and refined that Adams technology. And then with their marketing department, they went out there and promoted it. And last year, they cleaned everybody's clock.
Really?
And they sold a lot of drivers on the coattails of the fairway woods.
And what does that offer me as a, 14, 15 handicap? What am I going to notice right off the bat with that?
You'll get from that, the benefit will vary depending upon your swing speeds. At higher swing speeds, you'll be able to notice on your miss hits down low that you're going to get off, a lot more distance and dead center. Dead center, if you strike any of these, arguably they're going to be very similar.
Okay.
And that's why we have all
it's
these
all about
different,
the miss hits?
Different brands. And we sold lots of Callaway and Titleist and Nike last year, too. So it's going to get down to where your miss hits are. A lot of times, and which club head is going to have the center of gravity and forgiveness where you need it. And that's where a fitting and a launch monitor can help.
And here are these, now we're moving to the next aisle of TaylorMade's, and these drivers have compasses at the bottom of them.
Okay, going back to Tom with Sean and the drivers, you take the R1, for instance, and the R1 and the Titleist drivers and the Ping drivers are a couple of my personal favorites. And the reason why I like them is because they all have weights in them. So here you have the you can adjust the loft up and down. You can go ahead and adjust the face angle by dialing in the dial at the bottom of the club. And so you can go up and down with the loft, reset the face angle for the preferred look and bias you want. And then what you have, and this is one of Tomashon's things, is everybody plays with too long of a driver.
Yep.
And
yep.
A lot of these drivers are 45 and a half, 45 and three quarters. And Tomashon and Ralph Maltby at Maltby Golf Works, they both say the same thing, that drivers, most people should be playing a 44, 44 and a half inch driver. They're going to go straighter, longer, more usable distance, more fairways hit.
And so but why don't the manufacturers hear that?
That doesn't sell drivers. And so, all some guys want to do is blast it past their buddies a couple times in a round of golf, and they're happy to do that.
And they think they can do that just because they have another inch and a half on their shaft?
If they hit it dead perfect.
Once around.
They go ahead and get it. So that's part of an interview. And when I fit somebody, I ask them, you know, how do you approach the game? Are you just out there and having fun? You want to blast a couple drives past somebody? Or are you seriously working on your score and you want to get your games down and hit more fairways?
Yeah.
And that determines, you know, what I might suggest for somebody's shaft length. But going back to the drivers and fitting a driver, because these also have weights in them, there's leeway. The heads are made lighter than average, and the weights are put in there to bring it up to weight. So I can go ahead and put lighter weights in this, make this over length, and I can go ahead, I can make a 47-inch, like a long drive competition driver out of these clubs. I can also put in heavier weights and chop it down and fit somebody to a 44-inch driver. And on the launch monitors, you look at the numbers, they bear fruit. When I get a smart, thoughtful customer who wants to just hit more fairways, oftentimes we'll go a little bit shorter on the driver.
Yeah.
And you hit 10, 20 shots with a longer driver, hit 10, 20 shots with a shorter one. You look at the average. You delete the worst hiccup shots. And then look at the average usable yardage. That shorter driver is usually going to be longer. Tom's right. Ralph Maltby's right. But that with the...
It's not sexy.
With no. It's not as much fun either, but, you know, it's why you're out there on the golf course. Are you out there to blast drives and have fun, or are you out there to get your score down? Or, you know, I think a lot of people should have two drivers.
Really?
Mickelson had two drivers for quite some time.
And most of the time he doesn't even carry one.
Who's the other guy? Is it Cooney? One of the bigger hitters a few years back, he had two drivers. But, you know, really...
But they don't pay for their drivers. Drivers are expensive.
What? That's our used sections right over there. So we've got used and we've got new and everything. But today, having two drivers makes sense. You can have a short conservative driver with a higher loft, and it may not go quite as far on your best shot, but you can hit that on tight holes, short fairways. You're not playing good. You can have a long driver in a wide open hole if you want to go for that par five, or you're just ticked off because your buddy's been driving it past you all day. You can take it out and wail on it.
Yeah, well, you know, we say a lot of times on the show, it's I'd give me 10 feet closer than 10 yards farther any day of the week.
Yeah, but it's really all about putting in wedges. You know,
right,
we're really
right.
All this other talk is silly.
So why are we standing? Really, I don't know. We haven't even talked about the wedges. We've been here on the because drivers sell.
It's what sells. What brings
it's
people
so
into the store,
and we're not blowing by Titleist and Cobra here to get to Ping in Cleveland. But let's just go ahead. And
well, no,
it.
We started with the R1, so the Titleist 913. Again, the same thing. You've got with the weight port in the back of it. And the adjustable grid they have, and you know that's one of the neat things you can do. You can go up, down, left, right, and fine tune a driver before or after the sale, and you can adjust the length with a weight port.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome.
Hey.
And on the Ping drivers, same thing.
Just saying hi to a customer.
you have the weight port in the back, and. You can adjust, fine-tune directional and loft parameters too, and the Nike driver as well. So those are like my four favorite drivers, and partially because, selfishly speaking, they're easier to fit people into because you can get really good results.
Okay, so we talk about innovation, unique design, things like that. This, to me, this Nike driver with this huge cavity back, this huge hole in the back. Explain this. Tell me, you know, because I hit one for a friend of mine. I hit, took one swing, and was blown away.
But it's all about the candy apple red hot rod finish, really.
Yeah, right. Versus the white finish. But does that have any significant impact on results?
The aerodynamics of this paint job actually gives you about 3 miles an hour club head speed.
You're yanking my chain now.
Just a little.
I'm asking about these Convert drivers.
Had some. We were talking about again leaps and bounds and advances in drivers and or irons earlier, and you know, the irons I had went back into history, and then with the drivers I kind of brought us current with the adjustable drivers, but with this one Nike actually kept it very. The whole point of the name Covert was because the whole process of designing it, making sure they had the patents dialed in, legal department confirmed it, then they launched it. And that's why it was Covert. The whole process of designing that driver was like a covert operation.
Oh,
so
is that right?
Industrial espionage. They didn't want somebody to beat them to the punch.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very cautious about it, and thus the name Covert.
Great.
There's actually a story behind it. But the neat thing about the cavity back is if you put the weight forward, you're going to go ahead and help lower spin, among other things. With a cavity dug out, more heel and toe weighting, you're going to have a high moment of inertia driver. So you end up getting both. And the beauty of the Nike over the TaylorMade and the Titleist and the Pings is the level adjustability and the simplicity of the adjustability. It only comes in candy apple red. You better be willing to swing a hot rod and not have any problems with it. But the numbers are right there. Anybody can adjust that.
Hmm.
You know, if you think you're hitting it too low, dial it up 1 degree. You're hitting it to the left, dial it to the right.
Hmm.
And it's just so simple, all in one.
And it works.
It does.
Wow.
All the adjustments work. Some
really?
Are more complicated than others.
I see.
So it's going to get down to...
So you're saying this Nike is the simplest.
It is the simplest.
Huh.
And you have, the tour head and the other reason why this is a neat club head is you have the tour head and you have the recreational head. Perception
and,
is,
and people should really pay attention and ask questions about, does a tour head work for me? Is this the...
That's the perception. The tour head's better. But the tour head's smaller. It's going to have less spin. It's going to work the ball left and right more easily. And it's going to come with
but
a little bit...
But you got to know how to do that.
Exactly. You got to be able to want to do that. First work it onto the fairway and then decide where you're working it from there. Phil Mickelson with his Callaway deep three woods at the Open, you know, he's playing like a 43 inch driver like we grew up playing. It's basically the equivalent of that,
and he's a tall guy.
Well, and what he managed to do at Muirfield is he could work the ball because he had more control over the smaller club head and the shorter shaft. We were talking about long and short drivers. Basically, what he was swinging was the equivalent of Ralph Maltby's hero driver he promoted in his golf books. High lofted, shorter length, and for a lot of people, going to a Callaway 3 deep or the Titleist FD and going to that kind of a 3 wood is going to be longer. But on the Nikes, what's really neat is you can get the tour shaft in the recreational covert head.
Okay.
So the neat thing about the Nikes, too, is I can put in the lighter weight, low moment of inertia, faster swinging recreational shafts for somebody with a, you know, a lighter swing speed and less golf athleticism. I can take the tour shaft out of the tour head, and I can put it in the covert, no upcharge.
Nice.
So, again, just it's a special order. We don't have them on the shelf, and most golf shops don't, but we can do that.
You can get it. So we in above Nike here, you have Adams Golf, which is not one of the big players, but good product.
They're arguably the biggest in hybrids over recent history and really pioneered hybrids on tour.
Yeah.
But they, in regards to drivers, you know, would be behind some of the other names we've mentioned. But when you go to Adams, then you have some other things. So it's all marketing and perception. So it's a 460 head. It's got a 0.830 COR to the face. So it's going to have roughly the same moment of inertia. It's going to have roughly the same spring off the face. One of the things that Adams has done marketing-wise is that they put in top-dollar shafts. So here you have the Matrix HD Radix. Last year in the LS, you had the Fubuki by Mitsubishi Rayon, the number one shaft on tour. And the Fubuki is a little bit softer tip at a very low spin tour grade shaft that a lot of top amateurs, club pros I know, and their tour players that play it on tour too, it comes standard in the club.
Wow.
So rather than spending big bucks in marketing, they put it back into the shaft of the club and it's kind of a sleeper. Hmm. And that's the neat thing about working here is it took me a couple months to figure out that was in there. Somebody came in asking about it because they'd heard about the shaft.
Hmm.
And I pulled one out, fit them, and it was some of the best numbers I ever had in the computer.
Really? Well, so that's really interesting. So now here we're looking at the bottom of all these clubs, and we see big names on the bottoms. But how important and how much does the average consumer not pay attention to the shaft, and how important is the shaft?
The shaft is just as important as every other part of it. Yeah, it's got to be the right weight. It's got to be the right flex point. You got to have the spin rate from the shaft match the loft of the head, and you got to have it the right length, as we talked about. You know, it's these clubs are fit. The off-the-shelf clubs, as they sit, are fit, like Tom Wishon says, for a, quote, standard average golfer.
Right.
They're not fit for anybody specifically. They're fit for different standards. The tour clubs are set for faster, stronger swinging players with lower indexes generally. The recreational clubs are fit for somebody with an average swing tempo, somewhere between a senior golfer and an average 40-year-old guy. And, you know, where you run into problems is, you know, tall guys, short guys.
Right.
Maybe the contractor guy, you know, who's built like a tank and used to play baseball, bats number four in his softball team, and he can hit the Jesus out of the ball. But he doesn't have the athleticism or ability. Does he go with a tour head or does he go with a regular head?
And he just wants to hit as far as he can. Every single shot.
Yeah. Well, it depends. If he's a finished carpenter, he may want to hit a few more fairways. You know, if he's the framer, he probably wants to beat it out there. But I guess I was talking about a framer.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. So now, you know, we've not even gone into the fairway woods and the hybrids. We really have been talking about drivers.
Well, we touched on the fairway woods.
Yeah, and then of course we have the wedges, which are a whole different category of what's going on. And is that a different fitting?
Well, the wedges would follow the irons. So in a whole set fitting, you would usually start with the irons. Then you would figure out the lowest iron you have a playable trajectory with and consistency with. Hi, Ray.
I want to grab a wedge.
Oh.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
We are on the show floor, and so these interruptions were going to be expected. So
he
no.
is the best at what he does.
Really?
That's all you need.
No, wait, so tell
Fred,
me.
You mean Fred here?
No. So why is Nick the best at what he does?
He's careful. He explains things and doesn't talk down to you. He spent time researching. He's a player. What more can you ask? If you can't do it, he does it.
And did he fit you?
He fit me both irons and a driver.
And how are your results?
Pretty doggone good.
Like what?
Consistent.
In what?
Friction, movement.
Really?
The feel I was looking for.
There's a testimony right there.
No, I've been playing here's, for 4 years.
Nick, put the 20 back.
Seriously, he is very good at what he does, and he cares. That's important.
Thank you.
Can I buy something now?
Yeah, sure. Go hit the course.
No, seriously. Get it.
But remember, you can't wear denim on the course.
See, that'd make you feel dumb if you ask the same question three times.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Okay, Nick.
So more than I deserve. But you on the wedges, so you would start a complete club fitting. Usually I would go with the irons first. You figure out what iron they struggle with, and you cut it off in the bottom. At the top end, you decide. Then you need to decide roughly what your set makeup is, see how many clubs you have to play with. Then you go to how many wedges they want. Then you get the spacing in the wedges, the transition from the irons to the wedges. Most people's bags are all screwed up. You know, the gaps and spacing, people struggle with it, and they hit knockdown shots, and shafts don't match up. Most wedges have very stiff shafts. The average golfer in here plays a regular flex lightweight steel shaft or graphite. We can special order a wedge to match the set. Hmm. So tuning the wedges into the set, that transition, when you're – even if you're a 20 index, a 30 index, you can pick up an 8-iron or a wedge and not every shot, but you can stick it in the green. Mm-hmm. And when you make that shot, you'd like to see the same results you see on TV.
Sure.
When it looks pretty and everything works right, but if the shaft is too stiff in the wedge, or some spec, the loft, the lie is off, and it doesn't seem to match your irons, it's going to be harder to make that shot in the first place, and then you're not going to get the desired results. Mm-hmm. So wedge fitting, I think, is probably more important than the iron fitting.
Really?
Because that's, at the end of the day, that's how you're going to score. That's how you're going to save your par. Mm-hmm. That's how you're going to stick that club and give yourself that birdie putt. So the wedges and putters really is where, if you and I were really, and Tom was Sean and everybody, we would all start off our conversations and books about wedges and putters.
Really?
Instead of about drivers and irons.
Mm-hmm. And so when you're doing a fitting and someone's coming in for the entire set, are you going to advocate to have more wedges in their bag than hybrids and fairway woods and, you know, the big boy clubs? Or
absolutely.
Yeah.
I go with Dave Pelz on that. Maybe not a super lob wedge. But having his books and read some of his stuff, too, and then with my own bag, you know, having four wedges like a 45, a 50, a 55, and a 60, it's just a lot more intuitive, a lot simpler. The average golfer doesn't have to make the half, three-quarter swings, they can hit a few more greens and, again, set themselves up for that birdie putt.
There's a lot of conversation that's been on this show about the design of wedges versus irons, and the folks over at Score Golf talk about how the 9-iron should be designed more like a wedge than a 6-iron.
Is that Terry Kohler?
Terry Kaler, yeah.
Kaler, okay.
Kaler at Score Golf, yeah.
Yeah, and no, then, I had an account with Eidolon. I didn't mention him earlier, but he was one of the better component suppliers to buy wedge heads from with his Eidolon and Score wedges.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's trying to sell more wedges.
Yeah.
And he makes a great product.
He does.
I tend to have a slightly different opinion. I think more of the clubs should be designed more like the irons. And I like to fit people in the gap wedge. I'd rather fit somebody with a gap wedge or approach wedge, universal wedge, whatever the company might call it, in the iron set. And the reason why I like that is the leading edges on those irons tend to have straighter edges. I think they set up and target better. Mm-hmm. For the average golfer, doesn't have the fine eye of a tour professional or PGA professional. So that straighter leading edge targets better. And then segueing into your more sophisticated wedges, like Eidolon Scores or all of ours, the Vokies and the Clevelands and the Mizunos, and the new Callaway wedge, which is really neat too. Your sand, your lob, your super lob. Those are all very specific to the turf you're playing, whether you're a sweeper, a digger, the courses you play on. You know, do you want to pick it off a hard pan and flop it over a sand trap? Is that a shot you're going to encounter most of the time in your muni course? Or do you have to plunk it out of the rough get it to stop in the green? And then you get into bounce and lofts. But I kind of like the gap wedge as part of an iron set.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's talk about repairs and how people should sometimes maybe get repairs done instead of changing.
It happens. And that's one of the neatest things about working here and helping to kind of run and organize the repair department is a lot of times people come in with a reshaft or they want something cut down and understanding the custom club side of things and being able to, well, when I chop it down, well, we re-swing weight it. So it costs $5 more for some lead tape or some tungsten powder, but now they walk out of here with a better driver. And if they're on a budget and or they got the club for free or it's for personal reasons, it was their you know, their grandfather's club that taught them how to play golf when they were kids, you know, making that more enjoyable and putting that club in their bag right by putting the right shaft in it, shortening it, lengthening it, rebalancing it properly, just like we were talking about in the driver department, and making sure grips are put on straight and the right size. Most people play with standard size grips. In my opinion, the average guy should play with a 1/32 oversized grip.
Good. And can you figure that out in a fitting?
That's usually a really good fitting. That's where you would finish up, usually with selecting the grip, the texture, the feel. Huh. And going back to what you're talking about, the wedges, is making sure if they're keeping their wedges, you're fitting them for irons. You know, have them bring the wedges in, put new grips in the wedges at the same time, make sure the diameters are the same. You know, you do a really nice fitting in a set of irons, and they walk out the door, and they have their three standard wedges in their car with smaller grips on it, so they have more grip tension. Mm-hmm. And so they may strike their irons better, but now you just messed up the wedges in their bag because the grip size is different. So the little things matter, the big things matter. The average golfer needs custom fitting more than the tour player. The tour player can take one robotic swing. They know if it fits or doesn't fit. They have enough confidence that they, one, two swings, they know the club's right or wrong. And they have a good idea of what needs to be done to make it right. The average recreational golfer doesn't have a clue and they assume it's them. And it's too bad because, you know, we want to grow the industry. We want to grow the game. We want people to play faster. You know, USGA, if they really wanted people to play faster, they would spend a lot more time emphasizing and promoting really good fitting and getting people to play better and, you know, then sometimes putting pins in nasty places on Fridays and Saturdays and having the rough groan in some courses. That doesn't help with the play either. But
and Marshall's not helping you look for balls. Okay, so another topic. Well, this has been unbelievably educational. I really appreciate you spending so much time explaining these things. I learned so much. I can't believe it.
Well, I hope I didn't put my foot in my mouth too often.
Well, you'll have to decide that yourself when you listen. But what I would like to do at some point soon is I want to come in here and have you fit me for clubs. And let's go through a fitting process. And I'm going to videotape this, so that we can go ahead and take that and put it up on Golf Smarter TV and go through a process and what I learn about being fitted and then realize, am I playing with the right clubs, hybrids, you know, wood, driver, wedges? Are these the right clubs for me? Are the changes that I've made in my swing over the years since I've gotten these clubs, are they still correct or not? Because I was fitted for mm-hmm. these. So I would love to get your feedback and love to come and do that video with you.
We can do that. It'd be my pleasure. And, you know, might have to do it in a couple sessions.
That's okay.
You know, I'd probably start with the irons, go to the wedges. Then I would fit you with a fairway wood. And then we'd fill the gaps with hybrids.
Yeah. Okay.
And the driver would be the icing on the cake.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because getting ready to make some moves on, you know, right now what I'm doing is I'm carrying the hybrids for my 3 and 4 iron, but I'm carrying a 3 wood, but it's actually a 4 wood and a driver. I'm carrying 5 wedges.
Yeah, everybody should take note that you're playing a 4 wood. What's your index?
These days it's gone up to 14.5.
14.5.
I've been down as low as 11.9, but I'm in that.
And you know, like a regular flex, stiff flex.
Regular metal flex.
Okay.
Okay.
But, you know, everybody should take note that you're playing a 4 wood. I play a 4 wood.
Well,
4 woods are actually magical fairway woods for most
golfers. And I'll tell you because...
Or 3 high launch, and TaylorMade's the marketing gurus of the wood business.
So, and we talked about Jesse Ortiz made my club for me, and he said, look, I'm going to give you this. You don't have to tell anyone it's a 4 wood. It's really, you can say it's a 3 wood if you want, but it's really a 4 wood.
Yeah, but Jesse Ortiz's 4 wood actually is almost like a 5 wood.
Oh, now I'm really confused.
Because it's loft and center of gravity.
Okay.
Jesse Ortiz, going back to the Olimar days, he has one of the shallowest face heights. Mm. And I've done this in the past here with used ones in our bins that we had sitting around, and I can take one of his 15-degree three woods and put it in the hands of a slow-swinging woman. And because of the center of gravity being so low, it launches and gets up in the air really nice.
I like the club. It treats me well.
So,
it treats me well.
Very forgiving.
That's a whole different show, another topic. But thank you again for letting me take you away from the floor here and interrupting your workday. But it's really been awesome. Thank you again.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Michael. Thanks for being on the show. So Nick Manzano is the custom club fitter here at the Golf Mart in San Rafael.
I'm one of many.
One of many custom club fitters here. And again, if you'd like to get, if you have any specific questions that you want Nick to answer, I'm sure he'd be happy. If you want to just go ahead and click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com, send me the email. I will go ahead and forward it to Nick and you can start your own conversation with him. You okay with that?
Sure.
That was definite. That was a definitive answer there. All right. Well, Nick, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you. I hope I helped.
Well, the countdown is still going on, and there's only 5 more episodes until the monument of number 400. And I've got some fun stuff in line for you. Late yesterday, I returned from Oregon, where I was introduced to, quote, golf as it was meant to be, end quote, as advertised at Bandon Dunes. Now, even though I have yet to play in the UK, I now appreciate why people say that the courses at Bandon Dunes are the closest thing to Scottish golf in the United States. I played 4 of their 5 courses and recorded a conversation with Grant Rogers, their director of instruction, who provided incredible insight as to how to adjust your game for extreme conditions on a coastal links course. Now, on our first full day, we played 36 challenging holes, and I'm being very kind when I say challenging holes. Then I sat down with my caddy to share stories and pick his brain about the insanity he regularly sees from all skill levels while looping at Bandon. He also caddies on the Champions Tour, and I got him to reluctantly share stories from inside the ropes. And then the next day, I headed out to Quail Valley, just outside of Portland, to play 18 more, and that wasn't so difficult. It helped my ego dramatically. I got to tell you, when you finish playing tough courses like that and then go to your home course, you feel great. Well, this felt like a home course for me. Anyway, I played 18 there, and it is actually Quail Valley is the home base of Jim Waldron's Balance Point Golf Schools. So Jim was giving lessons, I played, and then when we were all done, end of his day, he and I went out to dinner, and during the meal at this Thai restaurant, we recorded episodes number 400 and 401. And he's proven multiple times on Golf Smarter that he is an amazing instructor, and he did not disappoint during these conversations. Great stories, great instructions. If I haven't told you recently, let me one more time say thank you so much for becoming a Golf Smarter member. It means a lot to my family. It allows me to continue doing the podcast. My wife's like, okay, you know, if it's not just a hobby, you can keep going and spend as much time and money that you do on this. Hey, Bandon's not cheap. Anyway, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.